So good afternoon, everyone. We can see that today you are on fire. You are now early, and we hope that we won't keep you for much longer than we need to. So we want to start with Agenda Paper 15A, which is Approach to Guidance on Qualitative Characteristics. Just a quick reminder, in May we came here and we talked about our sort of general approach to revision of the materiality practice, of the management commentary practice statement. This month, we are starting bringing you papers on specific topics. So why do we think that we need guidance on the qualitative characteristics in the revised practice statement? Well, first of all, we've had the practice statement now sort of asks that information in management commentary to have those qualitative characteristics, but it does not provide any guidance on them other than sending the readers to the conceptual framework. We've heard that the readers of our practice statements are different to our normal audience, so they may not be familiar with the language and the conceptual framework and our standards. So we think that just having a cross-reference is not helpful. Also, we've heard that currently information management commentary does not necessarily provide useful information, does not necessarily have the qualitative characteristic that we wanted to have, and the gaps in reporting are summarized in paragraph 7. And we think that part of the reason for those gaps may be that there is no guidance on how preparers should go about it. Also, the nature of management commentary itself is different to the nature of other financial reports and to the nature of financial statements. So we expect, for example, to have a bit more forward-looking information in there or more explanatory information. So there may be that some guidance is needed for management commentary that is not needed for financial statements. So to develop the guidance on the QCs, we of course started with the conceptual framework, but in addition to that, we've been looking for every QC whether anything in addition to the conceptual framework is needed. We've obviously looked at other documents that we've got, like for materiality practice statements, which we will discuss in the next paper. And we also looked at the guidance issued by other standard setters, and of course we considered the feedback we received from the consultative board. So with that in mind, how do we expect the revised practice statement to look in terms of qualitative characteristic? We think that instead of just listing the QCs and cross-referring to the conceptual framework, we should include a brief explanation of each qualitative characteristic and the idea behind it. Is just to give the readers enough flavor to understand what we expect them to do. And in addition, we anticipate providing specific guidance on considering particular qualitative characteristics where we think that such guidance is needed because of the nature of information in management commentary is different. So before I move to Agenda Paper 15B, setting out our recommendation for materiality and relevance, we'd like just to ask you for any comments and suggestions on our sort of overall approach.
Sure. I agree with your sort of overall suggestion, which I would summarise as trying to make this document a bit more standalone than it might otherwise be. And I think it's particularly important because I know during the project we've sort of made the observation that the people that need to pick up and apply this document might be slightly different to the normal population who pick up and use our books. So I think it's particularly important. And in doing that, I think we should also, as much as we can, it's difficult for us because we're so close to our literature, try and sort of take a step back and be conscious of trying to read it through the eyes of somebody who's not part of our normal community. And one of the things that just struck me when I was reading this paper and some of the stuff for ASAF was one silly example which made me go back and check the conceptual framework, which is that we always talk about things to do with net cash inflows. And if you're not an expert, that might think that that might be read as sort of meaning that we only care about revenues and things and we don't care so much about costs. And I think we need to be really careful to make sure our language is clear. Because you could have lots of startups which would be, you know, would want a lot of information about what their plans are that's ultimately going to be helpful. for their success, but they could have a long period of outflows.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that we're not interested in that. And so I think we're going to have to not only make sure it's standalone, we're going to have to try and be quite self-critical in terms of, you know, whether a layman really will get what we mean.
Mary?
I think Sue's point about standalone and being explicit is a really important one, because when I started going through these papers, I was wondering why we were incorporating a discussion of materiality into this document when normally we have materiality in one place and send people to it. And we've learned the hazards of having materiality discussions sprinkled throughout and the wording drifting. But I think if we say up front, for this reason, we're trying to make this more standalone, so we're including things that we might otherwise cross-reference, would be just a useful explanation to those in the know about why they're finding things repeated there, as well as making it more useful. One of the other lessons I wanted to pick up is in paragraph 7 of paper 15A. You set out some gaps in current reporting practice to explain why it does not always possess the qualitative characteristics. And one of the things I think that's been very powerful in the disclosure initiative is spelling out what the source of disclosure problem is. Sometimes it's relevant information is missing. Sometimes it's not entity specific. Sometimes it's there, but it's obscured. So I think going from a high level of does not possess the qualitative characteristics doesn't tell even an insider really a lot. And I think if we can just spell it out as sometimes relevant information is missing, sometimes it's there but it's presented poorly, sometimes it's there but it's obscured, you know, just spelling it out. And I think this might also have maybe an opportunity to be integrated into the materiality process in paper 15B. But I think just spelling out a bit more what are the different sources, and then kind of mapping there are these different problems and here are the different things we're doing to try and address them, not in incredibly labored detail, but just trying to bring this out might help explain things back and forth a bit more.
Yes. Anne?
I have a question around paragraph 17. I wasn't clear why you've made the exception on management's view and strategic forward-looking information, orientation rather. So in paragraph 18, you say you'll discuss it elsewhere. So I'm just not sure why you say these are not consistent with qualitative characteristics, in the sense that you could look at them and say, well, information that we get that's strategic or forward-looking, it can be relevant information. I wasn't sure why you take those two concepts and say that they are not consistent, or you don't group them with the others.
Well, we thought that it might be that the better place to discuss them is with the objective of management commentary, because it is there, and we know that when we were discussing the objective with the board back in November, we had some queries how the objective of management commentary is different from the objective of financial statements. There are also other aspects that you asked us to clarify. So we thought that these two points, management's view and strategic and forward-looking orientation, are one of the things that can actually explain us how the objective of management commentary is different to the objective of financial statements. So that's why we think that bringing them there and integrating them into guidance on objective might be more helpful.
And that's fine. It's possible to read paragraph 17 to imply that those two concepts or items are inconsistent with conceptual framework, but
That's not what you mean.
Okay.
That's the clarification.
Okay.
Thank you.
Gary.
Thank you. Very quickly, I agree with the staff recommendations for all the reasons that have been mentioned. I would just want to add to it why I think it's important for this whole project is management commentaries are not viewed in big companies as accounting documents. They're not generally prepared by the accounting staff. You might have input to it. You might own snippets of it, but it is not viewed as an accounting communication. So it's a management communication. I think we need to tailor the guidance standalone document for people that are non-technical accountants and non-technical auditors and so on for all the reasons just stated. So I just want to reinforce it, but say it's really it's more important perhaps this paper would bring out why it needs to be standalone.
Nick?
Yes, thank you. I think, I mean, the language is clearly a challenge to all of us, and I think you reminded me last week that I had championed the phrase narrative coherence, now we think is not understandable outside of this room, so I'm as guilty as anyone else. And whilst I think it's important that we try and relate the core of the conceptual framework, we need to detach ourselves from the language of the conceptual framework. And I'd go so far as not even to mention the phrase conceptual framework, because I think that alienates people in the world, in the intended audience here. They won't know, they won't be able to relate to it at all. But I think it's hard, but I think we really have to be focused on the audience for this document. It is different from our normal audience.
You haven't really asked us questions here.
Well, this paper doesn't really ask for any decisions, so now we are moving on to the paper that actually does.
First, I want to really strongly support what Gary said and Nick. And a couple of just quick questions. Paragraphs 14E, 17, and 18. All say strategic or forward-looking orientation. And it's not clear to me, are they meant to be distinct separate elements or synonyms for each other or close? What?
They are intended to mean the same things. It's just that when we were looking at standard setters guidance that's provided by different organizations, some would use strategic orientation, some would say forward-looking orientation.
Because I would say they're two different things. So we could talk offline, but I think you need to be careful. There's obviously overlap, but I think there's some differences. Also on just the idea about the different audience, in page 20, when you talk about bringing the conceptual framework descriptions, I think one compromise might be to bring them in with explanation or adjustment or rephrasing to make sure that they work for that other audience. My initial reaction was you couldn't just bring them in cut and paste, but I think keeping the link in a way that would be understandable would be good, and I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Generally, I agree with staff's paper. Just the one question about the comparability, because management, as Gary said, management commentary is different from financial statement. Normally, financial statement we got a very strict recognition, measurement, disclosure, even the format of the financial statement there. So comparability is one of the key, you know, information qualitative characteristics should be achieved. But the management commentary normally is entity-specific information provided in the management commentary. So I think the implication and the extent of the comparability may be different with regard to the management and commentary. So if we are try to achieve the comparability of the management commentary, maybe some useful information, especially those entity-specific information from management views, will lose. So when we do analyze, do some kind of analysis and provide some guidance with regard to the comparability, maybe there's some certain difference between, you know, what's the meaning of the conceptual framework we have, or whether what kind of compatibility we should have to with regard to the management and commentary.
Tadeo?
Paragraph 50 on paper 15B. I think that in line with Tom was making a comment. Management commentary is forward-looking. What I used to see also in some of the management's commentary, that sometimes it's, if there is too much focus on forward-looking without actually providing also an explanation about what was the current performance for the year, I mean, that I think that we should have a good balance, a weight between current and forward-looking information. I know that financial statements should deal with historical information, but I think that management commentary should do as well.
Mary?
Want to build on something Tadeu was saying, because I think one of our challenges with this project is keeping it tied to and anchored to financial reporting, because there are people, I think, who have ambitions for this to become very broad, very forward-looking, everything you ever wanted to know about ESG, a lot more issues. So while I agree with the staff analysis, and this is kind of slipping into paper 15B, that something being forward-looking does not preclude it from being covered by us in a management commentary, and we need to make that point. I think we can also overdo emphasizing that, so people think we are pushing them towards a much broader view of that. And so I just want to urge caution in terms of having balanced discussions around, you know, both explaining what has happened in the past, and I think your proposed objective for this project that talks about management commentary providing context for using the historical financial statements, it's kind of the, you know, draws the size of the box around it. So I think it's the right point you're raising. I don't think you're going too far, but I think people read it through the framework of what they hope to see. So we have to be very careful about.
Yes, I think in 15B we were trying to make that visible, that difference between financial statements and management commentary, just to say why we propose more guidance. But perhaps in places like in paragraph 50, we went too far and lost the word more forward looking and just.
Yeah.
So, yes, we'll be watching that.
Question B.
Okay, so now if we move to paper 15B, this is where we include our proposals for guidance on relevance and in particular on making materiality judgments. As I noted before, there is nothing in the conceptual, in the practice statement now. And we think that the guidance on making materiality judgments is needed because the board has had, and not only in relation to management commentary, that making materiality judgments is difficult. And recognizing that earlier in 2017 you issued the materiality practice statement. For management commentary, making materiality judgments can be even more challenging because its scope is broader. And also for management commentary, there isn't the same good basis of pretty comprehensive IFRS standards that let you know what you need to consider when you start preparing financial statements. So for management commentary, there's much more judgments that management would need to do in that case. We also had that there are issues in the current practice, and what we've had is that some management commentaries would not identify issues that are important to the future of the business, or even if they identify such matters, they would not cover them in enough detail, so users would not have enough information to understand the applications of those matters. Also, what we've had and what we've seen in our research, that obviously a lot of standard setters include materiality as one of the main overarching characteristics of management commentary, but they can explain materiality in different ways. So we think setting out the board's approach in the document itself would be really helpful to avoid any ambiguity. So we've been developing this guidance with a focus on helping management to identify information that users need. We haven't tried to prescribe specific disclosures because, as we noted in our May paper, the overall approach to this project is to keep the guidance principle-based. We started with the guidance that is provided in the materiality practice statement because it reflects the board's latest thinking on materiality. Although it states that it applies to making materiality judgments in financial statements, it is based on principles. So again, we think that those principles are applicable in management commentary. As we said before, we cannot expect the readers of our practice statement to be familiar with the literature, so we want to incorporate some guidance from materiality practice statement into our practice statement. Obviously, we do not want to integrate everything simply because it would make our practice statement too long and too probably too technically complicated. So what we are proposing to do is to incorporate in our revised practice statement key elements of the guidance from the management from the materiality practice statement, and where necessary, include cross references to further guidance in the materiality practice statement. And we also have been looking at places where we think additional guidance might be needed because of the nature of information in management commentary. So having looked at materiality practice statements, we think that what we should be focusing on is providing guidance on the process of making materiality judgments. And to do this, similarly to the materiality practice statement, that we think that it would be helpful to set out an example of the materiality process that can help management to make judgments efficiently and effectively. In the paper, on page 10, we include diagram A, which sort of shows the main changes that we want to make to the example included in the materiality practice statement. And all those changes are sort of there to reflect the specificity of information in management commentary. Then we don't think that each and every step of the process has to be explained in a lot of detail. We think that our guidance should focus on the first step. This is where you identify what information should be included and can be material. And it is this step that seems to be most challenging to prepare us. We also include some limited guidance on other steps, but they are in the later part of the paper. And just before we move to question one, I'd like to flag that in this paper we have two appendices. Appendix B comments on how the other guidance in materiality practice statement can be applied in preparing management commentary. And Appendix C is where we summarized feedback received from all the consultative groups with whom we discussed our proposals and set out our response to their comments. So with this, if we could go to question one and ask you, do you agree with sort of that the guidance on making materiality judgments, first of all, integrates elements from materiality practice statements and provides cross-references where needed, that it provides additional guidance when necessary because of the different nature of information in management commentary, and that it focuses on explaining the materiality process and, in particular, on identifying material information.
So, I agree with your overall direction of travel here, but I think this is probably a good illustration of how tricky it might be to use language that people who aren't usually following us can apply, because even if you look at the first few boxes where we talk about primary users and common information needs and all of these sorts of concepts, there are things which I think we've had a challenge even communicating to our normal audience. I can remember we had long and difficult debates about how we describe what common information needs meant, where you've got, you know, does it mean every information need of every investor and, you know, different classes of investors. So I think it's good to build on this, but I think we're going to have to be very careful to do it in a way that people can understand. And then just a couple of specific points on words. I'm not sure if it's the right time, but while I'm here. If I look at the diagram A, I agree with your sort of overall approach here, but just a couple of things on words to think about. And the first is the box that we've got at the top. And I agree with what you're getting at here, which is this idea of narrative coherence and sort of thinking broadly would be how I'd summarise it. But I think we need to be a little bit careful with the choice of words, because if I literally say I need to sort of start off thinking about a data set where I have no unanswered questions, that is terribly broad. I sort of know what you mean, but to the uninitiated that sounds like a pretty forensic endless search to start off with before I start paring down. So I think we need to be careful with the choice of words. And then a very specific point, and this is really something for you guys to think about, the word success. So focus on matters that could affect the entity's long-term success. Just thinking about translation and whether that word is going to work. And I'll tell you why. I try and express what I'm thinking about. And I don't know if it's a problem or not, but just to think about. If you think about some of the discussions we've had in the past on things like IFRS 10, where we talk about risks, and when we use the word risk, we think about it as being upside risk and downside risk. So it's a sort of symmetrical concept. and people find that difficult because they think of risks as being the bad things that could happen and not the good things that could happen. So I wonder a little bit whether the word success as well is like tell us all of the good stuff that could happen and not so much tell us what the bad stuff is that could happen to you. So just making sure it's a sort of neutral word. Translation and explanation, I think, would be helpful.
Mary?
It's funny. I smiled when Sue started talking about leaving no answered questions because I thought that sounded a bit more like a slogan than kind of a something that we would issue. And reflecting on the comments we've made already about we know the conceptual framework, but we shouldn't expect users of the statement to do so, I think we should still be going back to that. And even if we don't force ourselves into using that the CF language, you know, the thing we say about how far do you go is to satisfy the common information needs of the primary users. So that's what we say to ourselves. I can see why we wouldn't put it in this document, but that's what we say to ourselves and then say, okay, how does that translate? I think it does not translate to leave no question unanswered, because that would be more than the common information needs. I think it's something like anticipate and answer questions that we'll have to think about primary users typically have when using financial statements as those users try to predict future cash flows and assess stewardship. You know, it's a lot more words, but it's the typical questions, I think, is the common language version of common information needs. And also on this chart, I think when I said before, we should do a bit more to spell out what the classic mistakes are, you know, that's too generic, there's missing information, or there's information, relevant information, but it's poorly expressed or obscured. I think we should almost try and, if those are the typical pitfalls, add them into the relevant step on this chart. Just say, for example, consider whether, you know, there's missing, you know, you're succumbing to the missing information in step one. And a review, consider whether clear, you know, whether it's entity specific. Just give a bit more hints about what we've heard the typical complaints are.
Martin.
And I'm not sure if you need a specific for this management commentary, because my understanding was always, and also during my time when I have done it, I have not seen any big difference between, okay, what is materiality judgment based on the financials and based on management commentary. And for me, it was the same concept and the same levels of granularity and relevance, I thought. So I feel a little risk we overdoing that a little bit, because when I saw that we have management commentary, we doing that because we wanted to have it close to the financial statements and additional information to the financial statements and not going into other areas where people who have not any clue about financial statements maybe need guidance. That was not my understanding of the project. And therefore, I think I would have said we don't need an extra kind of guidance for making materiality judgments for this project, because I thought it is more closely to the financial statements, and people, at least in my practice, I have seen people who are producing a management commentary are familiar with the concept in financial statements and can work with it. Because I thought it should more work on content and not on this stuff.
Which is entirely different from what Nick just said.
Yes. And from what I thought our sort of working assumption was.
Yeah. In companies I have seen, I have worked for management committee, was done by the finance department and was not done by, I don't know, who else.
Yes, it's done by legal. And
they have supported, added some stuff, but it because the responsibility was with the finance department, and these people were familiar with the concepts of materiality, that is what I think.
Gary, what is your experience?
I guess I would agree with Martin. It's prepared by the finance department, but it is not prepared by the accounting department. And investor relations, in at least my experience and as far as I've talked to other colleagues, probably owns it, or the communications department, but it's not accounting. And Everybody gets to touch this thing. I mean, the lawyers to make sure it complies with whatever it there's. Don't say some of the trips up litigation, but it is not an accounting document. In my experience and experience of the colleagues of mine that I'm familiar with, I think your specific questions and question, I think we're going the right direction. I can support them all. I think, you know, the diagram A. I think, you know, de-jargoning it a little bit. I think most preparers understand what you're trying to do. Is list of it might be important. Analyze it and do a step back. I mean, people that write financial or business communications can deal with that. I think where they will have some problems, I think, problems is the wrong word, or we and they might not be in the same plane. I think corporate communications very frequently are written for the current stakeholders, not necessarily tomorrow's stakeholders. So I think primary users will be in a little bit different place than that, because that's current and prospective. And I think that's probably a point we got to emphasize, that assuming we want to stay with primary users, emphasize it's written for the present as well as the future, you know, shareholders. I think that should come through. I don't think that will commonly be obvious in there. And the more and more I think about it, I think Mary, I think you said it. I think I would make this, you know, very IFRS neutral, not conceptual framework, no reference to any standard. We got it really is standalone. Behind the scenes, we know the translation back to its source. Because assuming the accounting groups are not writing it, the last thing we want people to go, it's just another accounting document. And say, what do they know about writing these things? This is not accounting, it's analysis. So I think non-accounting jargon, non-IFRS, than perhaps on the cover page, I think would serve us well, assuming we can get to that point. And we know behind the scenes how it translates back to the CF or anything else.
And perhaps we could do the discussion in an appendix or so, rather than starting a document with a discussion about what materiality is in this context. People, you know, it's not something that people like to worry about too much.
Well, I think people understand what's material. I mean, these are experienced business people. They're touching these things. It might be ever so slightly different, but ultimately, most people, I think, will grasp material and makes it something that makes a difference, you know, for whatever purpose it's there. So I don't know that we need to spend a lot of time on what is material. I think at some point you had to assume these are business people that understand business language.
Anne?
I once did lots of interviews with people about management commentary, and the feedback I got would be consistent with Gary, that it's put together by people in various areas around the organisation, and then someone's making those final decisions either in finance or investor relations before it passes up the organisation. So the documents were often written by committee, which then echoes what people are saying about the plain language effect that we need to get. In relation to materiality, I think that lots of the studies tell us that materiality around quantified financial type measures is clearly understood, but not so much well understood for things that are not the numbers of the financial statements. So different to some of my colleagues, I do think some materiality guidance, as you're trying to develop in this paper, will be useful. I think we can see that in all the discussion and the work of the Integrated Reporting, the International Integrated Reporting Committee, where they focus right in on materiality and conciseness as two key things to do in their document. That would seem to tell us that when we're going away from the numbers of the primary financial statements, people do need some guidance. And then thirdly, I would like to comment on the diagram A. And I can see why you've picked that up and taken that out of the materiality practice statement. And I considered it quite a bit, and I thought in its present form it was really a blend. It didn't quite get to where I think you wanted it to go, which is to an example, because at the moment it's really a blend of something that was quite a simple diagram, steps 1, 2, 3, 4, very simple, some boxes, some words, a very simple diagram. And now in the context of this paper, you're suggesting to us that could this be an example of a materiality decision process or a materiality judgment process, and you're wanting to think about those steps and then think about how someone might work on them in terms of the management commentary. So if as a result of today's discussion you want to keep going with the diagram or the example, I would step back and have a look some more at it in terms of, is it supposed to be an example? In which case it goes more towards things that Mary has suggested or things that other people have suggested. Or if not, if it's not an example, well, then it can be very simple in the way it was simple in the materiality practice statement. But then you have to deal with the question of the language, because that was really accounting speak, and the fact that it was four simple steps without any clarification. So what I see at the moment is a mixture, and I think my suggestion would be to have a look at it again and decide what it is as a result of this meeting and this discussion, what you're trying to achieve with that diagram slash example, if it's going to stay in, I think there's some reformatting that you could do.
I think just on the diagram, I think we were not proposing to include it like this. I think this was here mainly to show you what we are trying to change.
Okay. So, I mean, an example, if you came up with an example, or probably if you came up with a diagram that captured things, it could be a very powerful diagram, because you think about integrated reporting, people refer constantly to the octopus diagram, and you see that reproduced in hundreds, literally hundreds of places. So were we to have something that conveyed the message we're trying to convey, it may be a powerful tool.
Gary again?
Thinking some more about materiality, I think there's multiple facets of materiality. I think most corporate preparers will understand about being right and being wrong. I mean, you've got statutes of frauds and misleading and false statement standards. I don't think it's so much that's the concern of materiality. It's other aspects. It's completeness and neutrality. It's, not all the best balling and the best foot forward. You kind of, with the good comes with the bad, for every credit there was a debit that allowed it to begin, and so on. So I think the materiality, I think, should be more focused on the completeness. Maybe narrative coherence is the right word, but it's the total story, not just, so you can be 100% accurate every word you wrote, but it's incomplete, or it's misleading in the sense it's because of what's not there. And when you deal with materiality, I think that's probably a more fruitful area to spend more time on rather than less.
Adele?
I like the concept of coherence. I think that's something important when we think about management.
Are we there yet? Sorry, but...
Coherence? Question one. We're not there yet, depending, we will come to complete to narrative coherence in the sort of next question. So I just don't know what you want to...
My point is that... And there is something in the speech of Gary talking about completeness. I mean, that when we speak about materiality, one thing that we should also take into consideration is the fact that we are taking into consideration everything. And then the aspect of the coherence, just to be sure that the information that management is discussing, for example, in a board meeting, whether this is material or not, I mean, that I don't know whether we could, in this diagram, also consider it as a principle that it should, in a certain way, be coherent with what management is discussing. That's the point. Materiality and what management is discussing, they are principles that should be together. That's the point. I believe that coherence should also be taken into consideration when assessing materiality.
Okay. So, question one. Are we ready to vote on that? Well, we, of course, you heard a lot of discussion,
yes.
Which leads to some adaptation, I suppose, adaptation of the proposals.
The question was, is not trying to look at sort of detailed drafting, but just trying to look at the overall direction of travel, I suppose.
Okay.
13.
Okay, go on.
So,
Yelena.
Yes, so now we are moving on to the sort of main chunk of guidance that we propose including in the revised practice statement. And there are three main parts of the guidance that we want to include in this guidance on identifying material information. So here we're trying to decide what we want to include. So first, we recommend that the revised practice statement recognizes the guidance on content elements in practice statements as a general source of information that may be needed by primary users. And this is because just like when you develop standards, when you will be revising the practice statement, you will consider what information is likely to be relevant for a sort of broad range of users of a wide variety of entities and in different circumstances. However, because of a broader range of information and management commentary, the revised practice statement will not be able to identify explicitly all the information that is needed by users, simply because, as you said before, it is an entity-specific document. So for management commentary, considering primary users' information needs becomes more important. And here we want to add two aspects to the guidance. First of all, we think that the revised guidance should explicitly link the decision of management of what to provide in management commentary with the objective of management commentary, and in particular to those two assessments made by users on the basis of information management commentary, that is, two assessments of future cash flows to the entity and the assessments of stewardship. The conceptual framework explains that for financial statements, that information would be information about assets, liabilities, equity, income, and expenses. For management commentary, that information would have to be broader, and it would also need to explain matters that could affect the entity's long-term success, and that could be trends and factors that affected the entity's performance in the future or could affect it could affect in the past or could affect in the future. And it is information about those matters that we had that users are most interested in. And so to help management identify those matters, we suggest including in the practice statement practical sources for identifying those matters, and we list them in paragraph 42 as the entity's capital market communication, as information used in managing the business, and information identified through engagement with other key stakeholders. Then our last recommendation in this section is that management needs to apply the notion of narrative coherence to determine what information to provide about each of those matters that they identified are material and important to users. And this is because we've also often heard that management commentaries fail to tell the whole stories. They are not complete, as Tadeo just said. So not enough information about those matters is provided for users. So to promote this coherent narrative in management commentary, we've been developing the concept of narrative coherence. As some of you mentioned, at the moment we haven't quite nailed it, and we use phrases like telling the whole stories and leaving no unanswered questions to sort of explain the idea behind it. But what we think it does is that it applies at two levels. First of all, we think that it applies to management commentary as a whole, but it means that all interrelationships between different pieces of information in management commentary are clear, and also that information in management commentary and financial statements is consistent, and you can see how they work together. But we think it also applies at a lower level, and it is here that we think that this notion can help management tell the whole story about each of those important matters that they've identified. And for that, we think that they need to consider what information to provide in each content element. That is, when discussing business model, when discussing strategy, operating environment and risk, and performance position and progress. And in Table 1 on page 16, we sort of included an example showing how we see it can be done. This last use of narrative coherence in identifying relevant information was discussed with the ASAF at their last meeting just a little bit more than a week ago. And what we've heard from ASAF, that generally they all agreed that the notion of narrative coherence is important and should be included in management commentary. However, they asked for more information about what narrative coherence means, and they also noted this wider role of narrative coherence in management commentary. Some of them suggested that we reconsider using the term narrative coherence because they thought it was either not understandable or could be understood as just applying to narrative information in management commentary. And on the whole, what we've heard from them is similar to what we're hearing from you today, is that we should try to use plain language as much as possible in describing both the principle of narrative coherence and in management, in developing the guidance for management commentary in general. So with this, our recommendation on this first step of identifying material information are summarized in question 2 on page 17, and we'd like to ask you for comments, suggestions.
Will we consider just using the word integrated? Because, of course, that has been used by another framework.
Yeah, it depends.
That basically tried to achieve the same, and rather than everybody introducing new terms that then have to be explained.
I think the difficulty with integrated is when it's used by the IRC, it's meant integrated across different subject matters. Whereas what we're intending here is integrated across the different content elements. So if you identify a matter that's important in one content element, narrative coherence for us means the other content elements should talk to it as well. So that's slightly different meaning.
Content element being strategy.
Is it also that in the integrated recording they go further and they link it to integrated thinking by management in making decisions? So it, I think it goes
a bit further.
Well,
that's what we hope to. That's we hope that the management commentary will be a reflection of such integrated thinking as well. I would imagine what otherwise is the purpose of trying to connect all these pieces of information. I'm not so sure it's all that different, but Martin?
The only question, because when we said about, okay, to identify the whole story is a complete story and the complete story, I think about the future is more difficult than we doing it for the financial statement, which is historic information. I think we, maybe I'm wrong, but I think you try to get the same kind of materiality thresholds as for the past historic information, and I think it's difficult because to speak about complete picture and everything which I know about the past is a different issue if I have to speak about the future and if I have to see what is the whole story about my strategy and the future success of my net cash inflows in the future. Difficult. It's more difficult than to tell what was the impact in the past. And if he gives the content which you have in Table 1, I say, okay, if you have to speak about this, but if he makes this in conjunction with to tell the whole story, right, we have in the practice statement, or if you maybe these are not the relevant things, maybe we have to think what is an addition, and then to require completeness, that is my point, I think it's difficult.
Sue?
I agree with your overall direction here. I just had a couple of specific observations. So I think what you've got in paragraph 42 in terms of trying to give some very sort of real examples of how you might think about what you need to provide information about is helpful. I had one other suggestion or something to include here, which would be guidance industry guidance or guidance in the market. So say, for example, the guidance that's been issued by the Task Force on Climate Change. If you can see that there's guidance on a particular topic, I think that's a pretty strong indicator that that could be something relevant for you to think of. There could be quite a lot of overlap with subcategory C, but it may mean that they need to think more broadly than they are today with their current communications and their current management discussions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also quite a nice thing to do, because then it could make it clear that by providing some of the, you know, the meeting the requirements in other contexts, you might be able to meet the requirements in the practice statement. Mm-hmm. The other comment I had was on table one. So I think using examples is going to be very important to help illustrate what it is that we mean, partly because the type of language we tend to use doesn't necessarily resonate with people who don't follow our work, and even things we're starting to come up here, like content element, it's a sort of very abstract sort of thing. So I think you need the examples to bring it to life. But we always have to also be super careful when we use examples, because we know that they tend to become, you know, the whole thing. And just my observation, if I look at table one, is I feel like this pretend company is talking a lot about what it is they want to achieve. There's not that much discussion about what could knock it off course. So say, for example, if I look at this company, presumably if it's currently got a lot of high street stores and it wants to switch to website, some of its risks might be, for example, it might not have as much flexibility as it would like to have because it's got lots of long-term leases on high street stores, so it can't be as nimble. Or there could be, you know, competitors in the market that are much more online savvy than they are because they're coming from a traditional business model, and I don't know what else. But I think it would just be useful to have a few examples of the fact that they need to not just say, like, this is what our dream is, but what are the risks that could knock you off course, to make sure it's a balanced picture.
So just in terms of operationalising that suggestion, are you suggesting we should make the examples deeper, or we should just make sure we've got a balanced
range? I think there should be a balance, because I don't think there's enough of the risk sort of aspect of, this is my strategy, so look at the strategy. They want to shift their mix to 30% from high street stores and 70% online, because I think that's where the market's going. But given where you are and what your business model is, you know, is that really realistic? Can you just wake up and achieve that or not? I think we need to be a bit more balanced in explaining that.
I think I would also be careful in equating narrative coherence with telling the whole story, because I think they are different things. Narrative coherence is if you describe something in the operating environment, also explain how that affects your business strategy. Mm-hmm. But that does not necessarily mean that you deal with everything that is important to your company. And also telling the whole story is a little bit like leave no answers unanswered, questions unanswered. It's endless, you know.
Yeah, we
don't have to come up with new phrases.
We've realised that's not a helpful description.
Anne?
I liked table one in that it showed what you meant by taking a particular issue and going across the content elements, as we're currently calling them. But it did then bring home to me the problem of using examples, and so Sue picked up and said this was positive. Another thing that someone could pick up on this and say, well, it's all forward-looking. It's not reflective of past that's gone on. So if we intend to use these type of examples to illustrate the way the guidance should be applied, I think they have to be framed, and they have to be saying that it's just an aspect that's in the table.
Yeah. Mary?
Hans, to your point in the risks of somebody saying, going through all the things you just enumerated, I think we should have, in this impossible task we're setting you, a brief description of obscuring and the risks of having so much in there that the most important information is obscured by the volume of other things. Just, you know, reminding people that they have to balance it, that you want to get people focused on the most important items.
Yeah. Most important, which is normal language for material, perhaps, but not exactly the same. Tom?
Sir, I hope I'm not being too nitpicky, but just looking at table one, I don't know if it's possible to slip something in there, but I look at the business model with the current status and the strategy of where they want to be in 3 years. There's nothing on how they're going to transition. And I don't know whether that should be a separate line, but if all I got was here's where we are and here's where we're going, I realize maybe too nitpicking it's all there, but I think whatever we do, it should be clear about how the transition, because I think that's the essence of strategy, is how are we going to get there?
Yeah. So, but also back to the point on framing the examples and yeah. saying, actually, this isn't a complete...
Yeah, and I apologize if it's too, but I, just to make sure that we get the how we're going to get there in somewhere in our things.
John Wu.
Thank you. I agree with your recommended direction, but I'd like to just one comment. Based on table one, there are content elements you are analyzing, customer demographics, right? Under this, the five elements, one, two, three, four elements. So, you know, basically, this project has started, seems to me, started from the kind of some kind of a lack of information on sustainability, economic thing, the environmental things, climate change, social responsibility. That kind of things are kind of one of a big pillar of this integrated reporting with the financial statements. So basically what I see here is that this is a very good example on just a normal, in a very narrow scope of capitalistic, in a scope of a transaction, the customer analysis. But I'd like to suggest another example that illustrates the kind of a more broad issues we are going to cover, the environment, the climate, that kind of thing. If we can write that kind of issues under this content element structure, then the structure might be a good idea. But otherwise, if we cannot describe such kind of issues under this kind of content element structure effectively, then we must think about the structure again. So that's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I should be clear, we do use examples with an ESG flavour as well. We try and avoid using them too often because it creates the impression that that's the only thing that we're seeking to achieve. So I think with these examples, a balanced range and focus is particularly important.
Rika?
Yes, thank you. About the example of this table one, I understand this is one of the examples of a coherent narrative in management commentary to summarize the different information of the management commentary itself as a whole to put together a summary to show, present the information. But I'm just wondering if I look at paragraph 45, it says providing coherence narrative in management commentary means not only the interactions between the different pieces of information in the management commentary, but also between information in the management commentary and in financial statement. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because of my background is audited, I can understand some information might be interact between the information in the financial statement. But for me, it's still not clear about how this table can represent such a broader meaning of the coherence.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, maybe the table one was not intended to illustrate that particular aspect, sort of the interaction between management commentary and financial statements. Rather, this table was just an example, and we're not suggesting that it's not necessarily be included in the revised practice statement. This is just to explain the concept for the purposes of this discussion. So it illustrates basically how information provided in one content element, for the lack of better word, triggers the need to provide information in another content element. So this is all this table is doing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. which in itself works pretty well, we think. Okay, how do we vote on the question? Because there's a lot of issues here. We just generally...
We could try and see if there's agreement or not, and if not, we can go to EDC.
Yeah? Can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
13.
Okay.
Is it 13 or 14?
Martin,
I think it was 14.
Oh, yeah. Okay, 14 then, sorry.
<It's not>.
So now we are moving to the last part, section of this paper, which is guidance on the other steps. And here what we've done is we went through the guidance that is there in the materiality practice statement. Now it is a principle-based guidance, and we think it is applicable in preparing management commentary. But we just thought that a couple of aspects we want to flag explicitly in the revised practice statement. And these three issues are that, first of all, we want the guidance in the revised practice statement to prompt the management to consider not only the size of the impact, but also the likelihood of a matter occurring when assessing the quantitative factors in making materiality judgments. And this is because, as we've already mentioned, it is more likely that management commentary will include forward-looking information, so they would need to assess whether information about some uncertain future event would needs to be included in management commentary. Secondly, we recommend that the revised practice statement prompts management to consider appropriate level of aggregation in management commentary. As you mentioned, of course, management commentary is based on the financial statements, so in many cases the level of aggregation will be similar, but at the same time, we think that in management commentary sometimes you would need to provide more granular information. For example, if we're discussing a particular matter only at a segmental level would mean that you obscure some negative trends affecting only a particular category of customers in that segment. And lastly, we recommend that management commentary highlights the links between different pieces of information in management commentary. And this is especially important when you, just as we talked before, if you discuss a particularly important matter in different content elements, users should be able to see how they connect together. So it is this that we want to capture in the guidance. So question three on page 19 asks whether you agree with these three recommendations.
Again, for me, the threshold is a little bit higher than we're doing it a little bit for the historic information, and that is what I have a little bit bad feeling, because it's all not wrong, but I think to link the elements about future things, in theory it is all easy, but translated for our organization, what is the strategy for our organization, what's the pieces, how all this link together, do we know all that already? And there's a kind of subjectivity. Maybe if I ask you a different answer than if I would give the answer, or Hans has a different answer. And it's my only point. It should not be so precise. When looking in the future is more subjectivity than if you're dealing with materiality about the past. That was my only point.
Maybe on that point, it's reminding me of the discussion that we had in the conceptual framework, and we wouldn't want to use those terms, but around measurement uncertainty, you know, how different items have a greater degree of measurement. Some items have a higher degree of measurement uncertainty than others, and maybe Martin's point about there being greater uncertainty attached to forward, you know, discussions of future developments or anticipation of risks. We need to do a parallel discussion to the one we have in conceptual framework about measurement uncertainty without just copying over the CF words.
Simple example, if I have to explain in management commentary what is my, I have 100 revenues, I know, okay, what is the pieces of this 100 revenues. I know what is the five last revenue I achieved, but for the future, I don't know what's in Maybe my estimation is in two years, my net cash outflows maybe is also 100, but I don't know that. Okay. It's all guessing what I assume about that.
But going back to that table one, you know what your high street online mix is now. You might have a forecast for the future, but there's a greater level of uncertainty attached to the target mix than there is to the achieved mix.
And that is where I'm reading all that links together.
Yeah.
Maybe I know it, but also maybe I don't know it, right? That is my only point here.
Just to clarify, I'm just
right of position that I exactly know the strategy and what the future will develop, and I don't know. I maybe have some thoughts and...
I just wonder if we necessarily mean the same thing when we refer to forward-looking. So, for example, we do not anticipate that we will be requiring or suggesting estimates or forecasts or budgets for the future. This is not what we have in mind. Rather, what we are on about is information that will help users make the assessments of implications for the future performance instead of providing forecasts. So I think maybe once we get to more detailed discussion of content elements, it will be clearer what we mean.
But is Martin making a more generic point, which is that if you look at this where it says consider the likelihood of the matter crystallising, it might imply that you need to know whether you think it's 15% or 57% likely that it's going to occur, but you're not saying that so much as just...
I think that what you're doing is developing a guidance statement, and so you're identifying, you're trying to help people when they're preparing a document. And so I think, to Martin's point, those decisions are going to be made, and there's things they're not going to say. So the guidance is encouraging thinking about what information will be useful and encouraging people to make this document that's got a lot of richness and depth and connectivity to it. But people are going to then use it and exercise their own decisions about what they will and won't disclose. So it still stays at the guidance level and encouraging people. I did want to comment on your comments about the four steps in the diagram, so not the table, the diagram. In the paper and in your comments, you've said that you're just focusing on the first and less so on the other three. So I will be interested to see how that plays out, because I would have thought it was a four-step model, and therefore, if you're building an example based on that four-step model, then it's, all the steps are important. I hesitate over your saying it's just the first one, the identification, that's important. I would have thought the rest, the way you present it and what you choose to include, I thought they're all important.
I think what the reason we focused on that is we see that as the most challenging, and the feedback we've had on problems with current reporting have sort of reported that. It's back to this problem of we don't want to repeat the whole of the materiality practice statement because it would make it a very difficult document to read, but we do want to be clear that all four of those steps are applicable, even though we're focusing on challenges with the first step.
So I'm recalling a project that I did that you have seen, and we looked at what people told us about items that were material. And they told us a lot about the list of items, but very little about how they made the judgment. Remember that? So that's to your point.
I had a question for Martin. So your concern about how difficult it can be to sort of forecast, does that mean that you're uncomfortable even with a statement like in paragraph 51? Because I thought that was the sort of general point that you were trying to emphasise, is that sort of level of, think about the likelihood relative to the possible magnitude. Is even that a challenge for you? Or if we're clear that it's sort of at that level that we're talking about, is that okay?
No, that's okay. For me, it is more difficult when we use more or less the kind of same materiality guidance, but my general point is it would be more difficult to have the same kind of level of materiality guidance to talk about the future instead of the past, because the future is by nature more I don't know so
you want us to acknowledge
much detail
that,
and what is it? Really important, maybe I miss something which isn't will be important, but I don't know. For the past, I know, because...
Do you want that to be acknowledged? Would that help?
I think it would be helpful, because otherwise people using this practice statement and mixing it up, okay. If I speak about the past and I speak about the future. For me, it is a kind of different things and different kind of precise kind less of information.
Granular, that has to be...
Sorry?
It's going to be less precise.
Less precise and less granular.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, materiality for the financial statements is extremely important because we have hundreds of very precise requirements that potentially lead to endless financial statements with too much detail, and that's to help.
Yeah, and here's a big picture, what I think about the future, right?
Exactly. It's a completely different document, and I think in most cases, management doesn't know what is material to their company in that respect. And they have their investor packs, which focuses on these things. And if they don't know, and there are lots of companies that don't know how to confront the future, they cannot possibly write about it because they don't know. It is really completely different, I think, from the financial statements. So I would not... Too many diagrams and
we need to make the point it's less granular.
Position in the document in this respect.
Well, we've been seeking to support an objective a process that can be applied as objectively as possible. So, in order that it can be enforceable, whilst recognising that we're dealing with things which are very uncertain. And it has to be management's view of what would move a user's assessment.
All right. Okay. Can we support the staff recommendation in question 3?
14.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's it, right?
Okay. I think we deserve a break till 4:10. 10:24.